Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you,
and hear the Rule Zero podcast. Yes, it's time once again for Rule Zero. This is the Rule Zero podcast, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. Let's do this.
Welcome back. I'm Chris.
And I'm Pete.
And wait, Pete?
Yes.
What happened to Eric?
Eric, unfortunately, could not make it. So I'm standing in as kind of proxy for him.
Oh, well, hi, Pete.
Hi, Chris.
Are you a gamer?
I am, in fact, a gamer. I've been gaming for close to 30 years now.
Well, then I guess you're qualified.
I would hope so.
Wow. I hope Eric's okay.
I hope so, too.
Okay. No, seriously. What happened was Eric is on hiatus now because he had a bunch of things come up in real life and is being a responsible citizen and dealing with real life before this extraneous distraction of a podcast. And because the news went out that Eric had to take a break, and so we had a contest, and we had hundreds of entrants. And we narrowed it down to a final few, and we had a cage match, and Pete won.
And that's only because I'm awesome in cage matches.
He is. It was pretty impressive.
It is. It's really quite startling.
Like, and kind of frightening at the same time.
Well, there you are.
No, so Pete is going to take over the co-hosting spot, and he will be joining us indefinitely.
Yes.
Good to hear.
Yes, indeed.
So who are you, Pete?
Well, I'm a longtime gamer. I'm a longtime listener of course, the Rule Zero podcast. I also gamed with you for several years back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day.
I've run at least once for you, possibly twice or three times.
I can remember one. I can remember a Burning Wheel game that you ran.
Yes.
Yes, and you also ran a first edition game that we played just a couple years ago, or just a year or so ago.
Yes, I did.
So you've been gaming since first edition days.
I have. As a matter of fact, that was my first game.
I was going to ask.
1979, I met two guys, both named Chris, but neither of them you.
Eerie, isn't it?
It is. And they both got me involved, AD&D, the hardcover books had just come out, and they sort of just shoved me into it, and I've been gaming ever since.
That's cool. It's about the same time frame as me, a couple years earlier, actually. Mm-hmm. So what are your favorite games?
I'd have to go with Danger Patrol, which is a lovely little game by John Harper. I'd have to say Apocalypse World by Vincent Baker. Apocalypse World is kind of a nifty game mechanic. If you don't have a chance to, I would highly recommend giving it a look-see.
I don't know whether to accept or tell you to keep going until you hit one I know.
Okay. And then finally, my big one lately has been Burning Wheel.
Okay, I know that one.
Yes, you have, because I ran it for you.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did.
Okay, we are joining, Pete is joining us today, and we are going to talk about conventions later in the show, and it's appropriate that we brought Pete on this episode, because Pete was my con daddy for my first convention, which was Origins 2009. Now, I used to read a lot of naval fiction, I haven't found any, worth reading lately, and found out that pressed sailors who were basically landsmen were put under the tutelage of an older crew member, and that person was referred to as their sea daddy. So I pressed Pete to help me orient at Origins 2009, and so I referred to him as my con daddy sometimes.
And I like it, so I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't continue to do so.
Indeed. You'll always be my con daddy.
I will always be your con daddy.
So speaking of conventions, we're going to talk about that after the news.
Okay.
So why don't we move on into the news?
Sounds great.
Okay.
It is time for the news.
This is the news. And I know Pete can't hear it right now, but we'll have some new music on the bumper because I actually spoke. My news is Rule Zero news. I got some music from a performer at the Renaissance Festival and asked if it was okay to use it on the podcast, and we will include a link to Maggie Sansone's page. She's a dulcimer player, and so I grabbed some of her music, and I'm going to be using it for the bumpers.
Fantastic.
So the news this week, or this episode, we're going to follow up on a story that we did last time about the Origins Awards, and we're also going to go into the Annie Awards. We talked about our favorites for the best role-playing game, and Dresden Files was up, and Dresden Files actually won the Origins Award for best role-playing game. That was not my pick, because I, you know, it's a variation on a system that's already been around, but it is a, you know, very nice book. I bought it at Origins 2010, and it looks great. I'd love to play it. So, you know, congrats to Evil Hat for winning that one.
Hear, hear.
And the best role-playing supplement also went to the Dresden Files for the supplement Our World, which is another hardcover. They came out with Your Story and Our World together, and one is the rules and one is the setting.
Gotcha.
So have you managed to play any Dresden?
I haven't. Interestingly enough, Rob Donahue and Fred Hicks are fellow statesmen with you. They both live in Columbia, Maryland.
Yeah, no, they're nearby. I haven't met them or gamed with them.
They're pretty decent guys. I met them, well, technically twice. I met them in Gen Con in 2007, and then I saw them again in 2009.
And they remembered you?
Fred remembered me. Rob, we'd only seen each other cursorily as I'd purchased Spirit of the Century. So,
okay.
From what I understand, though, that they'd kind of updated the Fate system for Dresden.
Yeah, I played a short segment in 2010 when they premiered it at Origins. So a year after they premiered it, they won the best role-playing game and best role-playing supplement for it.
Nice. That works out pretty well.
So evil hats off to them.
Yay, verily.
So you want to tell me about the Ennies?
Sure. The Ennies are the annual Gen Con Awards. They're sort of the Oscars of the role-playing group. Again, there were many different games up for Best Game. Evil Hat actually had two up for Best Game. One was Happy Birthday Robot, which I hear is very entertaining, especially if playing with younger people.
Cool.
There was also the Icon Super-Powered Role-Playing Game.
Oh, yeah, Steve Kenson wrote that, I believe.
I think you're correct. Legends of Anglir. Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook.
Also by Steve Kenson.
There you go. The Dresden Files, an honorable mention to The Laundry with Cubicle 7. And the winner, of course, was The Dresden Files.
In
Best Game.
Best Game. So
They were the gold medal winner.
So they won the Origin and the Ennie Award.
Yes, they did.
Excellent.
And the second place was Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook.
Okay.
From Green Ronin.
Now, I haven't played the new edition of Mutants and Masterminds, but I've played first and second edition.
You and I almost had a game go that was second edition, as I recall.
Probably. I'm not sure when that was.
I think it was about 4 years ago.
Yeah, that probably would have been second.
Yeah.
But they added a stat for fighting that was independent of dexterity and strength.
Nice.
So that's a bit of, I don't know, it's adding another stat, but it's, you know, doing something that's not really applicable to either one all the time. So
good. Fantastic. There's also a best new game category. And in this case, once again, Evil Hat had both Happy Birthday Robot and Dresden Files. Mm-hmm. Icons was there again. A somewhat newcomer was A Taste for Murder by Graham Walmsley, and The Laundry with Cubicle 7, and the Dresden Files took home the gold for that as well.
I believe Icons is also a variation on the Fate system.
Is it?
I'm not
familiar with it.
I'm pretty sure.
I am not familiar with it. I know that some of my gaming buddies have picked it up, but none of them have offered to run a game.
It's on my list of games I will get one day.
Now, in Best New Game, there was also an honorable mention to Stars Without Number.
What's that one?
Stars Without Number is a space opera game, and I'm not sure how to pronounce this other than Sine Nomine.
Okay.
It might be Sine Nomine, for all I know.
Yeah, probably.
But they offer it right now as a free edition. You can pick it up. And it's really a lot of fun. I have to say, I read through it, and I was looking for a group to game with it in, just prior to my most recent move. And unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm glad that it at least got honorable mention in the Best New Game category.
Very good. If you manage to get a game together and, you know, I happen to be in the area for you, I would be happy to join in or sit in on a session.
Fantastic.
Do you know if it's the kind of thing that lends itself well to long campaigns or short one-shots?
My answer to that is yes.
Oh, good.
To both. So, and that's pretty much it from Con Awards, I'd say.
So you didn't manage to get to Gen Con this year?
I did not manage to get to Gen Con this year, unfortunately.
Okay, and I also didn't get to go to Origins.
Sadly, the only convention I went to this year was JiffyCon.
Now tell me about JiffyCon.
JiffyCon is a small convention. It's a one-day deal.
Is it every year?
It's twice a year.
Twice a year, okay.
It's run by a group of independent game designers in Western Massachusetts. And they hold it basically wherever they can find a place to hold it.
In Western Massachusetts?
In Western Mass. Okay. This past September, they held it. I take it back. I stand corrected. This past October, they actually held it in Boston.
Oh, okay. That's not really Western.
I went to the one in April, and that was in Western Mass. That was in, I can't think of the name of the city off the top of my head.
But, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's essentially two sessions. Sign in is by 9 a.m., and then they run from 9 until noon. And then they reconvene at 1:30 and run from 1:30 until 5:30.
How many people would you say show up at that?
Probably 60 to 100.
Oh, okay. So it's really small.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's held, like I said, in small areas. The one that I went to in Western Mass was actually the basement of a mall.
So how many games are running if there's like 60 people there?
Probably about 12.
Okay. Well, why don't we bring that up in the main section when we're talking about cons?
Sounds good.
Okay. And also speaking of Gen Con, and speaking of superhero games, of which we've mentioned two so far, Icons and Mutants and Masterminds, other superhero gaming news, Margaret Weiss Productions announced at Gen Con that they will be releasing a Marvel Superheroes game in February 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check this out on Margaret Weiss Productions at margaretweiss.com.
There you go.
And the name of the game will be Marvel Heroes. So not to be confused with Marvel Superheroes, which was the TSR joint.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day.
With the Phaser Rip system, which I played to death.
Did you play the set teams, or did you try to create your own?
We played out of the box when I was running it. We played the characters, you know, from Marvel Comics.
Right.
I played a game when about 18 years ago, and we got to make up characters using the box set second edition character creation rules, where our powers were just all over the place. It was like a load of fun because, you know, the Marvel superhero powers tend to be all over the place.
That's true.
I'm not really sure about DC because I never really read DC beyond knowledge of the Iconics, but you know, if you think about some of the Marvel superheroes, their powers don't really make a lot of sense together. Like, you know, take Wolverine. You know, he's got claws and tracking scent and regeneration. You know, what do those really have to do with each other?
Actually, from what I recall, he's got actually heightened senses. It's not just his tracking. He can see better and hear better.
Yeah.
As well as regeneration. I'm curious as to what regeneration has to do with being a Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I don't
really,
know. I've never gotten in a fight with a Wolverine, but I bet if I did, you know, it wouldn't regenerate.
I think that if you shot it a few times, it would stay just as dead.
Right. And Wolverine has come back from a lot of fatal injuries.
Including being stabbed through the heart.
I think he was ripped in half, but that might have been an alternate
universe
story.
There's also that one. There's also that one as well.
So yeah, they're coming out with, I believe they have a license for 16 books.
Oh, nice.
And they will start in February, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
You can read about it on the webpage. It's, you know, I know that I'll be getting it as soon as it comes out. So
of course.
I'll have more to say then. It uses the Cortex gaming engine, which is what Serenity is based on, the Serenity role-playing game.
Yes.
I'm currently running a Serenity game at home here.
Fantastic.
We've been able to meet once a month, except we're not going to be able to meet in November.
Oh, that's too bad. Because of Thanksgiving?
Everybody has a lot of scheduling issues leading up to Thanksgiving, yeah.
Curse you, Thanksgiving.
Yes. But that's going well. I think everybody's having a good time.
Good.
In that. And the system works well enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have any complaints about it. I'm not really too keen on the experience point system, but, you know, again, that's a topic for another day.
True. All right. Also in the news, there is some interesting news about Pathfinder. Through my geek grapevine, I discovered that there had been a very short-lived Pathfinder Travel Edition.
From Paizo?
No, actually from a group that was licensed to do some Paizo, through the Open Gaming License, some Paizo-related supplements called Occult Moon, and they had come up with a core rulebook for the Kindle and the Nook, and they were offering it on RPG Now and Drive-Thru RPG for the low, low price of 99 cents.
Wow. I imagine that's just the SRD, or the PRD, as they call it.
Okay.
Without all the Paizo proprietary stuff, I imagine. It must have
most
been.
Likely.
I mean, that's the only stuff that's open content.
Right. Well, the thing is that it was only up for about a week, and then apparently Paizo took it down.
Hmm.
I didn't get a chance to load it because, of course, I don't have a Nook or a Kindle. But
right, nor do I.
But a couple of my friends who do have copies. So I don't know if that's going to go bye-bye. I'm not sure how these things work.
Yeah, I'm not sure because, you know, Amazon can reach into your Kindle and take your book back if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of weird.
So for all I know, that could be gone from my various friends' Kindles.
So Paizo put the smackdown on an unlicensed version of their core rulebook.
Yes, that was specifically for the Kindle and the Nook.
Okay, that's kind of interesting because a lot of people on the discussion boards at Paizo have been asking for a Kindle-friendly edition, and it just hasn't happened.
I'm willing to bet that they have that in the works, which is why they smacked down Occult Moon's attempt.
Yeah, that seems like the only reasonable reason they might do that.
Plus, there was all that hullabaloo about D&D 5th edition only being available in electronic format, which, WotC has neither confirmed nor denied will be the case. But
have they even confirmed that they're working on a 5th edition yet?
I think that at Gen Con they were discussing 5th edition.
What else do I have? Oh, I have another news item.
Do tell.
We're talking about superhero games. I'm going to bring us back to superheroes now.
Oh, good way to loop us.
Yes, Green Ronin.
Your favorite.
Yes, one of my favorite publishers. They have finally released the first supplement for a game they put out 14 months previously.
Ooh.
Yes, in October of this year, 2011,
mm-hmm.
The Heroes and Villains Volume 1 for DC Adventures came out. And now DC Adventures is built on the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition game mechanics.
Oh, okay.
But they put this out, I believe it was at Gen Con 2010.
Right.
The first book. So that was August 2010. And the first book that they put out for it came out this October 2011. So that's 14 months.
Okay, I have to ask this. Buy the first book?
I bought the first book.
Was there anything in there for character generation or?
Oh yeah, character generation.
The iconics or whatever.
There. And the iconic DC heroes and villains were there.
Okay.
Superman, most of the Justice League, actually, most of the main members of the Justice League were there, and their principal arch nemeses were also there.
Okay.
So if I wanted to just run those characters, I had that available to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to run an extensive, you know, Justice League short game, short campaign.
Okay.
But the characters just weren't there.
So you wanted more of a Justice League Unlimited type of setting?
Yeah, I wanted more of, you know, more of the other heroes other than the iconics, other than the Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman.
Gotcha.
Green Lanterns. And, you know, I wanted villains other than, you know, Lex Luthor. I don't even remember who the other villains are. And they just weren't there. And
right.
So they finally put out Heroes and Villains Volume 1 in October. They're going to put out Volume 2 in January of 2012. So that's 16 months after the game rules came out, he'll be able to run all of the characters in the DC universe. Oh, but wait. No. No, they've changed the DC universe.
Ah, yes, the DC new.
Yeah.
Yes.
These are quite clearly DC old characters.
Yes, yes, they are.
So if you want to play DC Adventures as they're going on now, I think you're going to have to wait for second edition DC Adventures.
I honestly think that DC has such a body of work that they were just kind of throwing out DC new as an experiment. But between the online gaming and the tabletop gaming, that's where all their really decent work is going to happen now for the iconic characters, I think.
Oh, probably. And I found out that Volume 1 is not just Heroes, even though only the Heroes are on the cover. Mm-hmm. It's the Alex Ross cover from the Justice trade paperback, and probably the individual Justice issues, but I didn't get those. I have the trades.
Right.
Yes?
I was going to say, you can find those covers in the back of the trades. So.
Oh, okay. First volume has the hero cover on it, even though that is, the first volume is like A through K or A through M.
Oh.
Yeah, I found that out.
Did you pick it up?
No, I haven't picked it up yet. I was actually looking for a PDF and print bundle because I want the book. I love to have the book.
Right.
But I want to be able to print the pages to run the characters, to run the game.
Gotcha.
And I haven't found anybody with that print PDF bundle. So my best affordable option right now is to buy the book from Amazon for a discount. You know, they've got a pretty high discount on that. And to get the PDF from DriveThruRPG.
Groovy.
So what else do you have?
What else do I have? I have nothing. No, I'm kidding. One of the big things that has been pretty much in a way with my D&D friends kind of shoved down my throat was the release of the Neverwinter MMO. Keep saying it's going to be coming soon, but it still hasn't arrived yet. But I have to say that just from the stuff that they have online,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I believe, playneverwinter.com, it's pretty sexy. I'm kind of impressed with this because they include a way for you to add content to the game. And it's through a thing called the Foundry.
Okay, tell me about the Foundry.
The Foundry is a way for you to bring in NPCs that you have created and also various adventures that you have created into the game itself. So that if you, say, for example, made a crawl in the catacombs of Neverwinter,
mm-hmm.
you could put it up on the Foundry and then other people could run themselves or, you know, their party through your catacombs. And
so
it's the NPCs that you have created.
So is this set up as an MMO?
I believe it is. That's what it looks like to me, at least.
So it's an MMO where the users add content.
Yes.
That's sexy. Really interesting. That's compelling. Yes, it is. That has my interest. I may, you know, put down Warcraft long enough to check that out.
There you go.
Yeah. So do you have any news about the rest of the game? Do you know how the gameplay is going to go? Is it based on 4th edition or?
From what I understand, it is based loosely on 4th edition.
Okay.
If you go to the site, they have a video and an E3 video that you can peruse, and it will give you a general feel for what the gameplay is going to look like, at least.
Okay.
I think one of the reasons why they're probably holding off is because they're running into various problems with adding content midway, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
With users adding content?
I think that might be, you know, that might be a difficulty, a bug that needs to be worked out.
I imagine so, because a lot of the construction of an MMO is balancing encounters and making sure that something is challenging but beatable.
Mm-hmm.
And users just don't have that kind of eye for that kind of thing.
They don't have
MMOs for a living.
Yes.
Right.
Very right. true.
So I wonder how that's going to go. We'll keep an eye on that.
I'm curious to see.
In other MMO news, the Star Wars game coming out soon.
Ooh.
Old Republic.
Very sexy.
Yeah, it looks really good. The trailers look really good. One of the comments on a trailer that I saw said, I don't want to play this game. I want to see this movie.
No, I agree with them there. Plus the ability to play Bounty Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Just very, very sexy to me. There's been, I've been kind of sucked into the Clone Wars cartoon because my son is a huge fan of them. And I have to say that they're so superior to the first two episodes, 1, 2, 3.
That wouldn't be hard.
It wouldn't be hard, but I got to tell you that, they brought in some stuff that's just phenomenal. Not only, but the big one for me was the season 2 Rise of the Bounty Hunters, which is a really solid storyline. And it introduces some very fun characters, and you get to play kind of variations of those characters in the Old Republic game.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah. I would be more inclined to check it out if I hadn't, you know, had a really bad breakup with Lucas.
I understand, you know, and when you don't write and you don't call for a while, it just doesn't.
You know, things just didn't work out, and we went our separate ways, and we're both happier for it. So, anyway. And that's all the news that I have.
And that's all the news that I have.
Well, then, let's get on to talking about conventions in the heart of the matter.
Sounds good to me.
This is the heart of the matter. We're going to talk about convention games in this episode, and both Pete and I have a little bit of experience with conventions. Pete, substantially more extensive experience with conventions. How long have you been going to conventions, Pete?
Well, initially I went in 1993 to Gen Con, but after that there was a gap of about 11 years, and then I started going semi-regularly in 2004, going to the big cons as well as a couple of the smaller ones.
Would you be, or do you still have a count of how many cons you've been to?
I believe that in total, I have been to 12.
Well, okay. So that's 6 times as many as I have.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, because I've been to Origins twice. Technically, there I was go. At another convention in the late 80s or early 90s, but I don't really count that because I didn't game.
Oh, fair enough.
I just kind of walked in and went, huh, what's all this about? Because this was at the University of Buffalo or Buffalo State. I really can't remember which. I think it might have been the first UBCon, if that's still around.
Okay.
I just kind of walked in because a friend of mine said, hey, there's this con going on and there's games and do you want to go? And I was just so out of my element in gaming with total strangers that I just kind of walked in, looked around the con, found the vendors, and was pretty content with that. Walked into a room where they were showing, I think, Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, yeah.
In Japanese, without
very
subtitles.
Funny.
And the room was packed. And I'm like, yeah, you guys aren't all understanding this.
Yeah, you don't really need subtitles for Vampire Hunter D. The story pretty much writes itself.
I've seen it once, and it was a long time ago. I'm not a huge anime fan, but there was absolutely no gaming that I saw.
Really?
I didn't. It might have been like happening in other rooms somewhere, but I didn't see them, so...
Gotcha.
So even after my first con, for years after my first con, I had no idea how gaming at conventions worked.
And it took you going to Origins with me to...
Yeah, I needed, you know, I really wanted to do it because a lot of my friends had talked about it, and, you know, you in particular. And I said, I really want to try this out, but I'm kind of out of, you know, out of my element.
True.
Shut up, Donnie. So I needed some guidance because I'm not real good at doing completely new things.
I'm glad that I was able to help.
I'm glad that you were too. Mm-hmm. So how many times have you been to Gen Con?
I've been to Gen Con twice now. The first time that I went was 1993, and that's the year... That was funny because that was the year it was at Mecca. It was at the Milwaukee Convention Center. And that was kind of the year that everything changed, because first off, there was a huge amount of Japanese stuff at that convention, not just anime, but card games, miniature robots, basically battle techie type stuff.
Well, you mean like in a sense that it was overwhelming the gaming that was going on?
Well, if you went into the dealer's room, there seemed to be a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Of course, I could have been in the wrong dealer's room for all I know. But yeah, Gen Con was kind of my... That was my last chance to kind of go and hang with my Denver friends at a convention, the people who I'd gamed with. And so I showed up somewhat late because, first off, I had a crappy Saturn that I had to drive through Canada to get there.
You do know that between Denver and Milwaukee is not Canada.
True, but in this case, I had already moved to Syracuse. So this was the last chance I was going to get a chance to actually hang out with my friends.
Okay. So we went over north of the lakes.
Yeah, okay. Because I had talked to a couple of friends of mine who would do martial arts type stuff.
Okay, so you'd actually been gaming for a long time at that point, like 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I'd been gaming since 1979, okay, so that's 14 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did you game a lot at that first Gen Con?
I actually didn't. I actually only gamed in one game, and that was for Dark Sun.
Huh, okay.
Because I was enamored of the idea, and I wanted to have somebody run it for me before I ran out and bought the box set and everything like that.
Right, well, that would have been pretty new about then.
It was. It was fairly new.
Or at least...
And I was actually... I was there... I'm trying to think who it was. I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, but they also had previewed Planescape.
Okay.
They had the art and stuff like that of Planescape.
Uh-huh.
And talked about what it was going to be about. And that was the first time that I heard of
Sigil. They premiered that there, or just gave you a teaser?
They kind of gave you a teaser, because I think they premiered it at the following Gen Con.
Okay.
I think that's right. Yeah. But anyway, so I got to see kind of like some preview art and things like that. And that was kind of nifty. I also saw the first time that font that they used, which was kind of cool. But
I know the one you're talking about. I can't remember.
But the Gen Con that I went to was the time when all things changed, because at that convention, there premiered a little known publishing company from the West Coast called Wizards of the Coast, who had heretofore only put out a game that I adored called Talos Lanta.
Uh-huh.
And I'd played it semi-regularly with some of my friends, and they had just come out with this game called Magic the Gathering.
Right. I was in England then, and that's where we picked it up. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I went, huh, a collectible card game. Boy, am I not interested in that. And I walked away. I actually walked away from a guy really, really, really wanting to demo it for me.
Uh-huh.
And I told him that I wasn't interested, and I walked away. And he actually he didn't quite chase me down. But he stood up from the table and came to me and said, well, why aren't you interested? And I said, because I like to sit down with a group of people, have dice in my hands, and role play.
Uh-huh.
I'm not here to, play whatever, Parcheesi or whatever.
But he came after you because you looked like you could afford the cards?
Apparently.
So like Wizards of the Coast was like kind of like Scientology back then?
Kind of, actually. They were very, very big on trying to get this thing pitched.
Huh.
And that was particularly interesting because at the same time, the Pokemon card game had premiered at that Gen Con, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Having not been to a prior Gen Con, I can't say if that's certain or not, but it had a pretty sizable presence there. So.
Okay. So you played one game at your first Gen Con?
I played one game at my first Gen Con because I showed up late and I'd missed the other one that I'd signed up for.
Oh, okay.
So
you had pre-registered and gotten your
games. I had pre-registered and I'd actually mailed in a money order.
Okay.
To make sure that everything was taken care of. And when I showed up at the sign-in desk, it's a much different beast in the 2000s than it was back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Much bigger.
That was about a couple of years before they moved to Indy, right?
Yeah. I think they didn't move to Indy until 96, maybe?
Okay. When Wizards bought out TSR.
Yes.
Okay.
Around that time. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's when they moved in.
Okay. So how did convention gaming go for you? How did the Dark Sun game go?
The Dark Sun game was kind of fun. I played a mule who had a wild psionic power.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun to play that. The one thing that seemed to cause everybody to choke was how magic was working.
Hmm.
Because one of the things, it seemed like you were destined to be a defiler. Even if you wanted to be a preserver.
Yeah, I think that was part of the system was that, it was very hard to be good about your magic.
Right. And so it made it almost prohibitive, and I could see literally the guy who was playing the preserver, like just his desire to play a preserver wilt to nothing.
Mm.
And I could tell he was jonesing to play a psionicist within,
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard the concept of playing a cleric without a god. In campaigns your power depends on your god, and I've seen it played out, and yeah, it's discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Only my wife stayed with it until she resurrected her god. That was actually a fun campaign, but after two years of playing one character, I was second level. It was pretty rough.
Ouch.
It was a pretty rough campaign.
I could see that.
But convention games would be substantially different from campaign games.
It's true, but before we go on to that, I want to hear about how did you feel about Origins when we took you?
Well, I was pretty nervous because I had no idea what to expect.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
I had this paradigm of liking to of a role playing game being an extended story, an epic, you know, story arc of your character, or you know, or consistent advancement. And it was kind of hard for me to wrap my head around the concept of you know, stepping into a game that I've never played before,
right,
and expecting to know how to behave in this game.
That's very funny, because my friend Eddie, who invited me to go to Gen Con 1993, he was also in the Dark Sun game, and the way that he told me to think about it ahead of time was that it's a single-issue story.
Right, right.
Rather than a year-long arc.
Right. Well, I was kind of actually nervous about, you know, being the only one at the table who didn't know the rules. and trying to, you know, I dreaded for days before the convention that I would go and you know, I would say, well, this is what I want to do, and all the other players would just kind of like shake their head and like put their hand on their forehead and just look down at the table and shake their head sadly. Oh, the noob wants to do something.
Now, you see, you don't have to worry about that, because a lot of times, especially at places like Origins and Gen Con, people are running stuff that they don't normally get to.
Right. And that's pretty much what I used the first convention for, was to play every system that I could fit into my schedule that I had never played before. I think there might have been two games that I went to that I had played before. I sat in on a Pathfinder Society game in the first one, but I didn't have a registered character, so I didn't get to, you know, to keep my progress with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a Mutants and Masterminds game. And I think every other game system I played was completely new to me.
That's fantastic, because chances are it's new to everybody who's sitting down at the table.
Right, it had never occurred to me. You know, I figured people went to conventions to play games that they love to play. But you know what? You can do that at home.
That's true.
So my first one, you know, thank you for your guidance. I you know, we got to play what, 3-4 games together.
I think so.
I know we played a Dread game. We played a 7th Sea game.
We played a
Spirit of the Century game, which was the funnest role-playing session I have ever been in.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know, you and the fellow named Matt, who was playing the Martian, let me witness the best RPG moment ever. And maybe we'll put that story up on the website. But really, you had to be there. But I was just like, that was freaking cool.
Oh, I know the moment you're talking about.
Yeah. And
I know the moment you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, and those were the only ones we played together. Might have been another one.
There are moments that I have to say that when I go to con games, wherein you just have that, you have that synergy. You have that moment where you're just playing off of a couple of people, and everybody's on the same page, and it's working.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it just makes it all the better.
Yeah. So when we went to Origins, we did the room sharing idea where we'd pile a bunch of guys into all the floor space you can claim in a hotel room, and we managed to get through the week that way without killing each other.
Somehow.
Yeah. And when I went back the following year, and I shacked up with the same group of guys, and you didn't make it. I ended up getting put in the room with the snoring people, even though, you know, I snore a little bit, not so much, but enough that, you know, as a, you know, person who recognizes that I have this problem, I can, you know, step away and say, okay, I will sleep in the snoring room.
Right.
Oh, that was a mistake.
Yes, it was.
'Cause I was put in there with two other guys in the middle of the second night of my absolutely being unable to sleep, I took out my phone and I recorded the sound of it. and I this it gets worse. I played it so that I could, you know, make sure that other people could hear this, and I saved the file under the name A Wookiee Raping a Bear. I
Oh my!
There were like three or four times this, you know, in the first couple nights where I went down to the lobby to try to just rest on a chair in the lobby because I could not sleep with the sound of lumber being sawed.
Right. No, I understand.
My advice is, if you're going to a convention and you're going to shack up with a group of guys, get a job, pay for your own room. Don't do it. Do not do this.
It's either that or room with people who you know you'll be able to actually get some decent sleep with. The way that I actually conquered that, because I'm usually the one guilty of being the loudest snorer, was that I would go and get involved in games that would take me until 2 or 3 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then I hadn't scheduled anything before 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I would give my roommates a chance to get at least 4 solid hours of sleep before I came back.
And that's just good citizenship.
And possibly disturb them. Mind you, they took great delight in waking me as they left at god-awful 1 o'clock in the morning, but still, you know.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah, I tried to avoid early starts when I went, because I know that I'm not a morning person. So and if you're going, you know, my advice to anyone who's going to a con is, if you're not a morning person, don't schedule morning games.
Yeah, don't schedule anything before 10 a.m., honestly. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
You're not going to be at the top of your game, and you're just going to make it pissy for everybody else.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way I went. Well, 9 o'clock was my cutoff, because, you know, I was pretty confident that I could get up by then, but... You know, they had 7 o'clock times, 8 o'clock times. I'm like, oh no, man, that's too early.
Hey, I have a somewhat off-topic question from this.
Okay.
How long had you been playing when you went to Origins?
Let's see. We went in 2009.
Yes.
So 28 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So I went 28 years of not ever going to a convention and playing a game, and I don't think I had ever played a one-shot other than a campaign that somebody started and then never reconvened with.
Gotcha.
Which is not technically a one-shot.
No.
But it happened, you know, in 28 years, you know how many times that happened? Quite a lot. But,
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's my entire idea of role-playing games was that you start this character as a little guy and you grow in power and you build your character's story and history as you go, and you sculpt this personality over the course of, you know, months or years of playing it. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I was kind of, you know, I had been thinking about lately before the con is, well, there's lots of games where that doesn't happen. And other than the Pathfinder Society and other organized play campaigns, there are, you know, your convention games are almost universally one shots.
True. I mean, there are a couple of exceptions. My friend Judd runs, I'm trying to think, at DexCon every year, he runs a continuation of a Burning Wheel campaign he started almost 3 years ago now.
But he has different people playing it in each session.
No, he has pretty much the same people come back, but he usually has one, as we like to call them, rogue player who comes in to kind of spice things up.
Well, that's cool. I was actually in one of those Origins I went to. I played a second edition D&D game where the characters had obviously been played for many, many years in this DM's campaign by whoever showed up at the table. So he had these characters that were kind of pre-gens, but they had been played along throughout their entire history.
Interesting.
Which is a neat concept, but there was a downside to that the GM had a preconception of how these characters behaved.
Oh.
And there was a little bit of, you know, less flexibility. And he, I think, was a little too attached to these characters because I did something that my character should have been killed for.
Ah.
And I didn't die.
Ah, see?
Like, I ground zeroed a fireball.
Oh.
Out of a wand of wonder. Hey, it's not my fault. I just rolled the fireball one at point blank.
Whatever.
I expected the guy to throw leaves. Who can blame me? That's all the list do.
Here I thought butterflies were going to come shooting out.
That was just as likely.
Exactly.
But no, ground zeroed a fireball.
True. No, it's true. I have to say that essentially all con games are one shots, and I think that's kind of part of why everybody plays things that either they've never played before and wanted to, or are thinking about running but just haven't.
Right.
And because this gives them the taste to do so.
It's a Masterminds game because I wanted to see how somebody else ran the game, because I had a couple problems with the system, so I just wanted to see another group play it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it worked out well. It confirmed a couple of the problems that I had with it, which was, you know, the speedster character that I played didn't really have a lot of options. You know, I could run fast. That's not going to hurt anybody. And the way the powers are bought in the game, it made it difficult to actually affect somebody. So I ended up picking up garden gnomes and throwing them at ballistic velocity.
Oh,
which was cool.
That's very cool. Yeah, that is cool.
Because you don't mess with a guy who's got ballistic garden gnomes.
I know that I never would. It's especially in his trousers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing about convention games, the characters are almost always pre-gens. Unless the game system allows for a character to be made within the first 15 minutes, that's
right.
Not a practical thing to have.
Well, there are games out there like Shock, Social Science Fiction, which your character generation is also part of the kind of game and world generation as well.
Right, Dread as well. That's the Dread characters, you get a questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And you answer these questions on this it looks like a high school essay quiz.
Right.
And it's usually short answer. And you give it to the GM, and he tries to use the information that you gave. But you're making up a character without any numbers or system rules or any frame of reference, in fact,
right,
for the context.
True.
You know, it's questions where you don't necessarily anticipate what the question is when you're answering the one before it,
which isn't bad. I mean, it definitely gives you fodder. It gives the GM fodder for the game.
Right. I mean, I remember one question. I played a professor of astronomy in one Dread game. And the first question was, how long have you been at the university? Why did you go into astronomy? And the next question was, how did your wife die?
Nice.
So I was like, oh, okay. I have to work with that.
I like these twists.
Yeah. A completely surprising question, but it gave me a fact about my character and some flexibility to fit it into a context.
Right. So. And then there are also games like Danger Patrol, wherein you're given a kind of a motif and an archetype, and you can blend the two, and that's how you create your character.
Okay. And how long does that take?
That takes about 10 minutes.
Okay. So you can all sit down at the table with no concept, sit down,
right,
and build a concept in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm.
What were some of your negative experiences on Origins?
At Origins, the first one I played, I signed up for a game that was supposed to be a third edition classic campaign of Expedition to Barrier Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
It was using the second edition maps and module, but supposed to be updated for third edition. And I said, this sounds really cool. I'm going to sign up for the morning session. And oh, look, part two is that afternoon. I can just eat at the bagel shop across the hallway from there and do that. So, and I got to the morning session, and it turned out to be an 8-hour demo for the software that the group that was hosting the game was premiering at Origins.
Oh.
And that was, you know, if I had wanted to do that, I would have signed up for a software demo.
You're here.
And it was pretty neat software. It was still a little buggy. It wasn't quite, you know, ready for market.
Mm-hmm.
But I really kind of felt that I wasn't necessary at the table.
Right.
And so
gotcha.
When we took a break at the 2-hour mark, I took a walk. And I went down to the desk and I turned in my ticket for the afternoon session and got a couple tokens.
There you go.
And did not go back to the table.
I'm surprised.
Why is that?
Not really.
Okay.
Couldn't resist.
Yeah, it was the only third edition game that I'd signed up for. So it was like, right. Well, okay. Lessons learned. I'm not going to play a game that I already know here.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't blame you. I do not blame you at all.
You know, and that and the snoring, I think, were the only unpleasant experiences, and those were two different years.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... my other bad experience was missing a game with Monty Cook because I thought I should show up at my later game.
Ah, see.
Yeah, because there was a guy who was looking through some of the modules and accessories at one of the vendors' booths, and he said, "What do you think Monty Cook would want to play?" And I said, "I'm not real sure. He just kind of, you know, takes whatever system you got and makes up different stuff with it." And he says, "Well, I'm supposed to run a game for Monty Cook in about an hour and a half." And I'm like, "Wow. Oh, are you looking for people?" "Yeah, we got a couple people. We might look for a couple more. Look for me." And I was like, "Well, you know, actually, I got another game at 9 o'clock. I'm gonna try to go for that." I walked away. I'm like, "The hell am I thinking?" And I went back to the booth, and he was gone. And I looked around for him, and I couldn't find him.
Yep, there's a way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I ended up going to my evening session of I Don't Even Remember.
Oh, that one.
So, lessons learned. If, you know, somebody asks you if you want to play D&D with Monty Cook, you say yes.
Yes, Ray, you do.
Yeah.
Silly, silly monkey.
Yeah. So that was a kind of a disappointment there. But other than that, I had a lot of fun.
Cool.
There was a lot of gaming going on in other rooms that I could just walk around and watch.
Very nice.
The thing that I did wrong the first time I went was I overbooked myself.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't really have any time to go to the vendor's room and just walk around the first time. I mean, I had some time, but not nearly enough.
You know, it's funny because at the Gen Con before we went to that Origins game together,
uh-huh.
I actually got to shake hands with Gary Gygax
uh-huh.
because I skipped out on a game.
Wow.
Because I had overbooked Gen Con. And I said, "Well, I can show to this game or I could not. I'll just go to the vendor's room." And I was walking through the vendor's room and there was a pile of people in front of me. And I do what I usually do in those situations. I just started slipping my way through them.
Okay.
And
because you got mad ninja skills.
I've got mad ninja skills. Plus, you know, I'm a fairly big guy and people tend to get out of my way.
Uh-huh.
Even the clueless fanboy ones. Uh-huh. But so I was weaving my way through and I turned a corner just as Gary and his handlers turned a corner.
Uh-huh.
And we just ended up face to face. So I shook his hand and I said, "Thank you for many years of fun gaming." And he said, "Oh, you're welcome." And then one of his handlers kind of touched me on the shoulder and I gave him a look that said, "I will break your fingers." And I walked away. And then the crowd surged around me and kind of I got carried away by the undertow and uh-huh. pushed over to the Conan massive multi-user online game,
uh-huh.
which I'm sure went somewhere, but obviously not up. So.
It's still around, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm amazed.
Yeah. So then, and that was probably his last con, right?
I think it may have been.
Huh. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is kind of sad. But yeah.
I'm really glad you didn't meet Monty Cook then.
Me too. I could be killing game designers left and right.
Yeah.
For all we know.
Now, in convention games, there is never really any opportunity for character advancement.
Well, like I said, in some games there is limited opportunity. But a lot of those, the advancement is taken care of in the form of markers or things like that.
Right.
That allow you to do more things.
So just like a hero point system.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Now, and that's coming from 28 years before going to a con, from mm-hmm. 28 years of gaming, my whole paradigm of characters was that you play to advance your character.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never really wrapped my head around the concept of playing a character that would never change.
Well, one of the ways you need to look at it is that the character, it isn't that the character doesn't change, it's that you're playing a con game to advance the story.
Right.
You're not playing to
advance
the character.
You're playing to experience the story.
Right, but also to help advance it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why, in Spirit of the Century, I opted to be such an active part in it, you know, mm-hmm. why I played a central character.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that this was a setting I was familiar with, and I knew I could help advance the plot.
Mm-hmm. And as a result of that Swords of Mars game session, I mm-hmm. actually went and read the first three books in the John Carter series.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. I was like,
they are.
I recognize this. And so that was, you know, something that I wouldn't have done had it not been for that game.
Well, there you go.
So I advanced myself. but you know, at the same time, you know, that was a character. I played a sky pirate.
Yes.
And, you know, that was a character that I had never seen before.
Right.
And that is a character that I will never see again.
You know, it's that, true, that character sheet. You know? On the plus side, though, that during the time that you were in the driver's seat for that character, you made the character your own.
Right, and I truly like enjoyed that. And that was something that I had never really experienced before, was playing a character without looking at what comes next on the experience point chart.
Yes.
And that's something that I see a lot in campaign games, and especially my campaign games. It's simply not there in convention games. Is nobody sits down at the table and goes, okay, after this adventure, what am I going to have my character able to do next?
Right.
Because that's just not a concern.
And I think that's actually kind of a good thing.
I do too. You get to really kind of roll with the character and play the character as he is and as you will always know him.
And not only that, but you can also take more chances with a character that you'll never see again. You know, you'll put it out there more, I think.
Yeah, I guess if you're not worried about surviving until you can get, you know, two weapon fighting
or plus five Holy Avenger or
right,
whatever,
right.
You know,
it's not a concern. So
you
can use that character as, you know, in noble sacrifice to advance the story for, you know, your. For your enjoyment.
And in our Dread game, I believe I actually did that too. I sacrificed my character for Noble.
Did you sacrifice your character?
I did. I walked up to the.
I believe I died first.
You did, and you died sexy. And
the GM
inspired me to die sexy as well.
I believe his name is Johnny Arcadian.
That could be.
From Windmill Games. At least he was then.
Yes.
He took me out in the hall and he said, okay, here's what happens. First of all, let me tell you, that was the coolest death I've ever seen.
It was sexy.
Now, here's what happens. So that was fun.
No, it was definitely one of the coolest, sexiest deaths I'd seen. And like I said, it inspired me to, when the time came, I did the big sacrifice, and that's when, you know, everything unraveled and the rest of the people were able to get away.
Mm-hmm. In the Dread session, we played with three girls,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up playing two games in the next Origins with one of those girls.
Oh, funny.
And one of them was a Dread game.
Nice.
Yeah, so I played Dread with her twice on two different successive years.
Cool.
And the other one was a Champions game.
Hmm.
Now I have played Champions in the past, but I went to this con saying, okay, I haven't played Champions in about 15-20 years. So I'm going to go and I'm going to try to play some Champions and see how it goes, and I did. And
so was the hero system still just as number crunchy as it had been before, or
you know, it didn't really, I mean, yes, but it didn't really seem that obstructive.
Good.
It didn't,
okay.
But you know, I never found it that obstructive to begin with. For one thing, I didn't have to create the character.
Oh, well,
which is
go.
One of the, you know, the hardest things about the hero system is that
Agreed.
You have to make all of your numbers balance and, you know, and worry about the GM accepting that your numbers balance. And then the GM has to check your math and then he has to call his accountant.
Right, exactly.
Has to run it through the computer.
Or the local professor, you know,
right.
Mathematics.
Right. I mean, with pre-gens, not an issue. So that's really True. Kind of the big obstacle for me getting back into the hero system is character generation and corralling other players' character generation if I'm running the game.
Right.
So it wasn't an issue in a convention game because pre-gen.
Beautiful.
That I'm not going to have to worry about spending his character points on.
Exactly.
But yeah, and it was actually a lot of fun because that girl was playing a girl on a high school age super team.
Okay.
And her character had a crush on my character, but my character didn't have any idea that she liked him. So we were playing off that for the whole campaign session. And I ran over and like broke her out of this force field prison. And she goes, "You saved me." And I said, "Of course I saved you. You're more than a friend. You're a teammate."
Oh God. That's hilarious. Very, very funny.
We just played that up and it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, not worrying about where that character was going, I got to get into the character, and not worrying about where that character has been, you know, was it gave me, you know, license to put my interpretation on that character.
which is wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's a great thing to do.
Now, the thing about campaign or about convention games, well, campaign games, you know, people come over, you socialize for half an hour, you play for maybe 3 hours, you know, you socialize for an hour, and then you play for another 4 hours. You know, you can play all night. At a convention, you've got your game slot, which is usually 4 hours.
Yeah, it's anywhere between 2 and 6.
Yeah, and most of the games I got into were 4. And I think there might have been a 6-hour session.
That's because, honestly, running longer than 4 hours becomes drudgery when you're running one shot, unless you've got a really involved one shot.
Right. And but that's the thing. It's like you have 4 hours to do a whole story that the characters can, first of all, understand, second of all, get into, and third, solve.
Right, which I think is a great exercise as a GM, quite frankly, to be able to
I think there might have been one of the games that failed to solve the problem in the two conventions that I went to.
Huh.
So I don't know if the GM kind of helps people along with that regard, because I've never run a convention game.
Well, in my experience, there are two forms of good GM during a convention game. One helps the characters along, so that as long as everybody's having fun, you know, it doesn't matter that he's fudging. The other one is the person who takes the roles as they come and then modifies the game as it goes. So what the end result is not necessarily what you might have thought it was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adds a lot to the overall.
Well, have you run games at conventions?
I have not. I was supposed to run at Gen Con this year, and unfortunately I could not make it.
Have you run pickup games?
I've run two pickup games.
Well,
and
let's define pickup games.
Okay. A pickup game is what our friend Ron one time referred to as whoring for gaming, where you kind of there's an area in Origins and there's an area in Gen Con where you can go and just basically have a game that you want to run.
Uh-huh.
And then people come over and ask, well, what are you running? And you can tell them, or you can put out things on the table like I did that show you what it is that they were interested in. And
Did you hawk your game at all? Like playing, you know, Lady Blackbird over here, or you know, anything?
I didn't hawk it like that. What I ended up doing was I was sitting there for a while at Origins, and nobody seemed interested. And there was a couple who were sitting over at another table, and they were playing a zombie game.
Okay.
Which was a combination light role play and card game.
Okay.
And they came over and started talking to me.
Uh-huh.
And we talked for about 20 minutes, and they decided to give it a shot. So they sat down and
we talked about Lady the Blackbird. Game you were trying to run.
Right. I was trying to run Lady Blackbird by John Harper, and it didn't have any takers. So I
pulled that one out of the air. I didn't know that was the one you were.
Yeah, no, that was the one that I ran as a pickup game at Origins. And then I ran a pickup game that was kind of a GURPS mishmash, actually. It was sort of, I used the basic GURPS dice dynamic, and I ran for these three guys because we had all wanted to get in on this game on the walkway between the convention centers or between the convention center proper and the hotels. There was a game we wanted to play on that, and so we all kind of showed up, and the guy basically said, "No, I've got a full table." And so we all sort of went off and sat at an empty table, and that's when we started talking. And just I kind of from the, you know, pulled it out of my backside and ran a game.
Wow.
And it was a combination ninja superhero space pirate.
Wow.
Thing.
You had me from ninja.
There you go.
So you didn't actually have a story prepared. You just said, this is the system. And made up something off the top of your head and just.
Yeah, I basically said, you know, what do you want to play? And he was like, I want to play ninja. What do you want to play? Superhero. What do you want to play? Space pirate. Fantastic. Ninja superhero space pirate.
Then you want the Let's world do of this. Cinnabar.
Of which, pretty much.
I'm kidding. Never, ever play that.
No, I'm kidding also. What I had said was they'd all docked at a place called Cynosure, which I stole from a comic book. Okay. But yeah.
Well, if it worked and you had, you know, the names, coming up with names off the top of your head is hard. So, you know, stealing from things that you
are
pretty sure that your players won't know, that's perfectly okay.
It's not even that. I just borrow heavily from all of the fantasy and sci-fi and literature I've read over the years, you know, very heavily. So
you never designed a convention game then ahead of time? If you were playing off the cuff on a pickup game, you probably didn't design one.
No, but I did before. I came up with a game prior to the Gen Con this year. But there was only really one game that needed to do that, and that was Danger Patrol. And I ended up just fleshing out Hard Times on Planet 10.
Well, I was inspired by a lot of the games that I got to play, and I thought I would like to run a convention game, and I would go over, I would say, this is a system that I would like to try to run a convention game, and I would try to come up with a story, and I would try to make a story where there were enough encounters and events and, just game-related, whatever the game currency is of adventure. Whether it's encounters, skill checks, whatever. And I always ended up going into what ended up being a 5 or 6 episode campaign at the very lowest.
Because, and you did that with pre-gens characters?
No, not with pre-gens, because I didn't get as far as character creation.
You see, that should be where you start, honestly, for a con game.
Really?
Yeah.
So, if you're designing a con game and you want to fit it into a 4-hour session, you start characters.
I start up with the idea of characters, and the way, for example, I'd mentioned Ron earlier. Ron ran this Hex game.
Hollow Earth Expeditions. I got to play in that.
And we originally sat down and said, okay, we know the setting. And he had an amorphous general idea of how he wanted the adventure to go.
Okay.
But the trick to a good con game is, how do you mesh these people together? What makes them want to fight on the same team? And so what we did was we came up with a group of people who had been part of the Royal Marines in World War I and all should have died, but somehow survived.
Okay.
And so, and one of the kind of twists we made was he created a doctor character who was younger than everybody else. And he's the son of the one member who has passed away.
Okay.
And then once that started rolling, we were able to come up with, he said he wanted to have a maximum of 8 players, so we came up with a group of 8 characters.
Okay.
We generated them, and then we said, okay, so these guys are like this. Where do we start? And so we started them all. They get together every year at this one pub in England, London. And then it goes from there. And then he asked me, what 3 things do we have to include? And I said, well, you obviously have to have Nazis. You have to have dinosaurs, but you can't have dinosaurs riding Nazis or vice versa. And so he said, all right. And then he kind of came up with the twist at the end.
Okay.
And from there.
So when he said we need to come up with 3 things, was that because there are 3 when you design a convention 4-hour session game? Then you have 3 essential events that the players will work through?
What you try to look through is between 2 and 4 major things. And then you can – I try to overplan by 1. So I figure that in a 4-hour time period, they're going to go through 3 major events probably. I make up 4. So that way if they come up with a clever way of defeating one of the earlier ones, I've got a 4th one to fall back on.
Or just circumnavigate it.
Right. And if they happen to really like something, then I can drop 2 later ones,
Okay.
Or 2 middle ones. And
so you have a little flexibility encounters go.
And the idea is to keep it as flexible as possible, trying to keep everybody on the same path, doing the same thing in a con game is an exercise in anxiety.
Yeah, I imagine
quite frankly.
So I had a couple concepts for that and did not narrow it down to 3 encounters, and that was my problem.
Yeah, because really you figure, I mean, honestly, if depending on the system you're playing, you can get away with 1 big encounter and make the majority of the game them getting to the big encounter, and just play that fast and loose, and they will make up that part for you. They will give you stuff to throw at them to get to the big encounter.
Yeah.
There was a guy who ran, I want to say 3.5 D&D for me at Origins back in 2005. And that's exactly what he did. He just, he let us basically come up, shoot ourselves in the foot a couple times on our way to the big encounter. And then he had stuff, that we had fumbled through earlier that he had, from what I could tell, just randomly generated be there waiting for us when we got to the big deal. You know, there were consequences to our actions.
Well, that's,
and it was really kind of cool.
So you didn't feel like you were led through it, though.
No, I didn't feel like, you know, like I was being forced down. There are two tunnels in front of you.
Right.
The left one is well traveled. The right one is not.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing. Well, I go down the right one. Oh, there's a cave in. You know.
Kind of. No, not to go that way.
So yeah. So.
I mean, so do you think that with if you want to, if your players kind of get off track, do you think you have to lead them a little bit, or I mean, in a 4-hour session, should you let them wander?
I think that would, again, it's one of those situations where if you have, you really kind of need to start off a convention game with a bang. So that's your first encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets everybody used to the dynamics.
Okay.
And then it gives you an idea of the direction they're going to go in.
Okay. That makes
sense.
Because
I had said to Ron, what happens if they don't grab onto the thing that lets them jump into the Hollow Earth?
Right.
And he went, huh. And I said, well, you need to leave evidence so that they can find later on that they have to go to this castle in Thule, you know,
uh-huh.
which is ultimately where the whole thing is supposed to end anyway, because it begins the next, the part two of the adventure that he ran the following year at Gen Con.
Uh-huh.
So it's just really, you just have to, you have to be flexible enough to know that they're not going to go the way that you want them to. So just play with what they give you.
Okay.
You know, so,
but you know, you're still confining them to the pre-gens, and you're exerting at least that much control over the game as a GM.
Yes.
In designing it.
Well, that and the fact that you've come up with like the you've come up with the big payoff at the end.
Right.
And you've come up with the initial bang.
No, well, they can't take your characters and they can't take your pre-gens and wander off the map and say, "I'm going to start a bakery."
Well, they can, but it's
right. It's not fun.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they're doing that sort of thing, going into a convention and doing that sort of thing is like, you know,
hey, it's your
walking,
money, pal.
walking into a football game and pulling out a chess board.
Yeah. That you actually know. Sounds like something I'd do.
Yeah, no, it does. But the thing is that you just paid $30 to see a football competition just so you could bring out your chess game.
Right.
Why would you bother with that?
Yeah. Have you encountered people like that? Like, you know, griefers who will just go there, go to a table to mess up the game?
People who tend to do that
uh-huh.
tend to get ushered out, I found.
I didn't see any way for a GM to call for help from any kind of room usher convention.
Usually it's
support.
The GM himself who says, but there's supposed to be.
I thought you were going to say it's usually the GM himself who gets ushered out.
No, who ushers the griefer out. But who basically sits there and says, I don't think there's a spot on my table for you.
Uh-huh. Have you seen it happen?
Yeah.
Really?
I did. In 2004, actually, I sat down at a table and they were demoing Weapons of the Gods.
Okay, which is what?
And it's based on this really kind of crazy Chinese or Cantonese comic book series called okay. Weapons of the Gods. And it in turn is based on Chinese legends.
Okay.
But it's a very, very stylized look to everything.
Okay. So what happened at the game?
So what happened at the game was the guy who was running it, very, very, very nice guy, sat down and introduced himself, pulled out the book as it would look once it was published.
Okay.
Gave us a chance to look at it. We began. We played around with the mechanics some. This one guy started griefing him, and he took away his character sheet and said, I'm sorry, I don't think there's room for you at this table. And the guy actually just kind of looked at him, and he said, if you want, I'll hand you back your ticket, and you can get...
Uh-huh.
You can get refunded, you know. And so he handed him back his ticket.
So the guy took that as an answer and left.
Yeah, and so the guy started to say something, and the guy who was running just ignored him and kept going.
So he didn't take the hint right away?
No, I think he really wanted to. I think that probably he was one of those unfortunate continual griefers who goes into a game, and because his friends like him, let him grief his way through a game.
Uh-huh.
There's this really great kind of, I'm not even sure if it's an apocryphal story, that went around probably about 6-7 years ago about the way a guy dealt with a griefer.
Do tell.
And he gets, the griefer gets himself invited to this guy's table, and the griefer says, I start digging, what do I find?
Uh-huh.
And so the other players try to get him to move.
Okay.
And the GM just sits there and goes, well, you know, how far have you dug? I don't care, what do I find? Well, I care, because that'll help me tell you what you found. Okay, I dug 6 inches. He goes, all right, you find dirt. And then he would go to the next player and the next player and the next player and the next player. And then he'd come back to this guy and he'd go, what do you do? And he'd go, I keep digging. What do I find? And he'd go, well, how far did you dig this time?
Uh-huh.
And little by little, you know, he would just have him. He wouldn't stop him from doing whatever it was he was doing.
Okay.
He would just let him dig. And he said, because ultimately somebody has to dig all those dungeons.
Okay.
And I thought that was a great way of dealing it because he let the other members of the group game.
Uh-huh.
And this guy be a DH.
Right.
The whole time, you know, and it still kept on going. But in the situation, and that's something you can do at a sit down at home long campaign.
Uh-huh.
At a con game, that's not going to fly.
Right.
Because you are so pressed for time and stuff like that. So you can just, I mean, you're perfectly within your rights to sit there and say, here's your ticket back. I can't play with you.
Okay.
I've seen people, you know, I've seen a couple of games wherein I could tell there was somebody griefing along and they didn't really do anything about him.
Mm-hmm. I had to stop myself from griefing in the one game.
Which one?
Great Power.
Oh, gotcha.
I just didn't care for the system, and I was starting to get very surly sitting at the table.
I can imagine.
And I caught myself starting to be the DH.
Gotcha.
And I went, I'm gonna be good. I'm gonna sit this one through. I'm not even gonna be rude enough to walk away from the table. But wow. I don't think I'm gonna run to the vendor's room and pick this one up.
Right. Well, I mean, there was one point where I sat down, and there were a couple of guys who were the gung-hos.
Mm-hmm.
And they just weren't. I just wasn't either in the mental state to deal with them, or I just didn't think it was appropriate for the game, or whatever the reason was. I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
But I stood up uh-huh. just before we began, and I said, "I'm sorry, I'm not feeling well, so I'm going to leave."
Mm-hmm.
And I gave the guy my ticket, and I said, "You can have my ticket, though."
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Thanks," and I said, "You're welcome." And I just got off and left, and they were like, "Oh, I feel better." So.
But you were just, you know, not happy there.
I just didn't feel, I wasn't feeling it.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, if you're not feeling it for a con game, walk away.
Right. And that's what I did with the demo game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great.
You know, I waited for a break because I knew that one was coming soon by the time I realized that this game was not going to get any better.
Well, sometimes you just have to walk.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If it were something where I knew we had just come back from a game and then it hit me that this was all this was, then I probably would have gotten up and walked away. But I knew we were, you know, within, you know, 20 minutes of a break by the time I realized that it wasn't going to improve.
Gotcha.
So I said, okay, I'm not going to be that rude. You know, if the guy were being a jerk about the game, then I definitely would have, but, you know, but he was really, you know, showing off the software. He was really into it. He, you know, obviously had put a lot of work into it. He obviously loved gaming and was trying to make a tool to help people game easier.
Right.
I gave him that respect.
Yeah. I don't know. There was one game. I'm going to say it was Origins 2005. It may have been, did we go to 2009 or 2008?
We went to 9.
Okay. I guess it was Gen Con 2007.
Okay.
There was a guy who was running a Munchkin game. And when we walked into the room, he had two tables put together.
Okay.
And I said, oh, and I said, you know, I've never played Munchkin before, you know, in any kind of setting, really. Is this something that's conducive to new players? And he said, sure, have a seat. And I said, okay. And as the time went on and more people arrived, I realized that he was planning on running for 20 people by himself.
And Munchkin requires one person to manage a table of, say, you know, 4 to 8 people?
Probably.
Okay.
I don't know for sure, but I can tell you that he put me off playing Munchkin for a while after that.
Huh.
Just because he thought he could run 20 people, and I said to him, that's an awful lot of people. The most I've ever successfully run was 9, and that was me working overtime.
Right.
In a far more complex game, you know, admittedly, but still. And he said, no, it'll be fine. And it wasn't fine. I mean, it took forever for stuff to come around. So I finally just got up and left the game. And he was so involved in trying to balance, you know.
Even 8 or 9 is a lot of people to run a single game for.
No, it's true. And the thing is they had there was a thing back in the day called X-Crawl.
Okay. I'm familiar with it,
Where you could get 10 people at a table and run that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why is because some of the characters were going to die in a con game.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't going to be, it wasn't going to be one of those things where, you know, you're in for the long haul, so you're going to play safer.
It's a survival game.
Right.
I actually played in a survival game where everybody survived because we were just like rolling ridiculously well. It was a zombie apocalypse survival game, and it was every other campaign had lost like two or three people by the time we got to like an hour and a half in. And he's like, "You guys are just you're rolling ridiculously. You're off the charts. I can't. this has never happened before." Yeah,
you've totally blown the bell curve. Yeah. Well, in the case of the X-Crawl, they did a kind of cool thing. I'm going to say this was in 2004 at Origins.
Uh-huh.
They ran two tables that were literally on the opposite sides of the room, and it was two teams going for the same goal.
Okay.
And if you died on one table,
uh-huh,
you got to go over to the other table and be a bad guy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. So you got to see, you know, and the thing was, I forgot what we were playing, but we'd just taken a short break and we were just watching these people like wander across and like scream at each other and stuff like that. And it was just, I don't know. It was as a spectator, it was as entertaining as it would be to play, I think. So
did you do any board games? Because I got to play Robo Rally at the last Origins, and I haven't played Robo Rally since like it came out. And it was a lot of fun. And I finally got to play it again. So,
the only board game I got to play was a HeroClix game.
Okay.
And because I'd never played HeroClix before, the guy I played against handed me my Tuckus and on a finely wrought platter. But I also didn't have a whole lot of fun at it because the guy just immediately came in, "I'm going to win this," sort of thing.
Uh huh.
And I was more like, "I'm here to play," kind of thing.
Right. Right. But you got to try it out and see.
But I got to try it out, and I still don't see what the big deal is. I mean, again,
the big deal is these are pre-painted plastic minis that you can break off the HeroClix base and make DC Adventures figures out of.
I guess.
Or Mutants and Masterminds figures, if you want to, you know, repaint them to non-IP characters. No, that's actually what I went on eBay and I bought a bunch of HeroClix for that express purpose to break them off the base, and use them in my Mutants and Masterminds game.
Well, there are.
So I think it's great that they're out there.
Of course you do.
Yeah. I played HeroClix when it came out, and I played against our housemate Dave, and I actually enjoyed it. Once you work through the bugs of the system, but then I put it down and went back to the role playing stuff. And
it's amazing how we always seem to return to that, isn't it?
Yeah. And I like board games. I don't like board games all the time.
Right. No, I understand that too.
So I don't think I got to play any other board games at the last one, but I got to look around at the board games.
Nice.
And there were some really, you know, pretty, you know, game boards that I got to admire. There was this Age of Sail game at the last Origins with these really huge ships.
Oh, fantastic.
It's like, oh, this is beautiful. I have no hope in hell of ever playing this game, but I just want to look at it.
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
Look how pretty that is. Yeah, I've been there too.
So I think we have talked about conventions as much as conventions can be talked about in an hour and a half.
Yeah, safely.
Yeah, without going on the wrong side of the law.
There you are. Even though we fought the law and the law won.
The law does win. It just does that.
Yeah.
Occupy.
Solidarity.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, that is this episode of Rule Zero. If you want to look into our show or get older episodes, which would be both older episodes at this point, or join the discussion, go to www.rulezeropodcast.com and sign up, or follow us on Twitter where we are Rule Zero Podcast, or find us on the Facebook as the Rule Zero Podcast. Contact us. I am Chris at rulezeropodcast.com and Pete is Pete at rulezeropodcast.com. Tune in next episode when we'll be talking about the family jewels. From me.
And from me.
Good gaming.
Good gaming.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com. Opening theme was written and produced by Rule Zero Podcast, all rights reserved.